Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 23 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, brought to you by the world's best resource for training hockey players, HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. I'm your host, Brian Sippets. If you'd like to contact me with questions about today's show, you can reach me at HockeyStrengthPodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't checked in with HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, right now we have over 800 articles, webinars, videos, and training programs all dedicated to improving the strength, power, and health of your hockey players. So definitely check it out if you're a strength and conditioning professional, a hockey coach, or a hockey family. And we know you're going to find a lot of really useful information from the top strength and conditioning coaches in the NHL, NCAA, and private facilities. If you're new to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, you can gain instant access to our members-only content for just $1 for the first 7 days. After that first week, you'll want to stay on board for all of our newest content for just $14.95 a month. Or you can choose to get 2 months free by investing for the year at just $149. So take a look. There's a ton of great information that's going to help you and your players, and we know you're going to love all that content. On today's episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast, we're going to be talking to head strength and conditioning coach for hockey at the University of Michigan, Joe Marr. We're going to be talking with Joe about his presentation for the upcoming Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic, where he's going to be leading our very first hands-on session and talking about power training big rocks and how he helps the Wolverines to be more explosive on the ice. Before we get started with Coach Marr, I want to share a little bit more information about the Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic. It's a live event hosted by HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, and it's going to be held at Advantage Strength and Conditioning in Ann Arbor, Michigan on April 30th, 2016. This was an awesome event last year, and we had a great response from all of our participants, so it's definitely something we're going to continue year after year. Right now, you can head to GreatLakesHockeyStrength.com to get more information about Joe's presentation and also check out the other great coaches that are going to be joining us. Other speakers this year include Devin McConnell from UMass Lowell, Dave Sensor from Ferris State University, and physical therapist and return-to-play specialist Greg Roskovensky, and the assistant director of Total Package Hockey in Detroit, Sean Perkins. We're really excited about this year's speakers, and this year we actually have the ability to do some hands-on presentations, which is what Coach Marr's presentation is going to be, so the value and usefulness of the information is going to be huge. Another thing we're definitely going to continue from last year is the social at the end of the conference. We had a blast last year, and it ended up being the best way to close out the day. We had a chance to meet a lot of the participants, and we actually had some really great conversations. So like last year, the first couple rounds are on us, and we're really looking forward to keeping that tradition alive. To get everyone ready for the clinic and to give you a taste of what the presentations are like, we're going to start releasing videos of last year's presentations on the site. We've actually got Dr. Steve McGregor's presentation up right now about quantifying on-ice training loads. So there's a lot of talk about monitoring these days. Dr. McGregor's presentation is basically about monitoring and quantifying on-ice load by using wearable devices. Last year, we also had some presentations. There was another monitoring presentation by Justin Rothling-Scheffer, Creating a Yearly Plan by Joe Marr, and Unconscious Learning by Jim McKee. There's some other topics mixed in there. So we're going to release those on the site. Be sure to check out those videos. You'll get a feel for the level of presenters and just the great level of information that we had last year. And we're looking to repeat that this year. Also coming up on the next four episodes of the Hockey Strength Podcast, my guests will be the speakers for this year's clinic. So we're going to give you a sneak peek at their presentations, and hopefully you can pick up some information before you come out here and join us in Ann Arbor on April 30th. All right, well, that's enough about us. Let's get to our conversation with Coach Joe Marr. All right, this morning we're on the phone with Coach Joe Marr from the University of Michigan. Joe, it's nice to see you yesterday. You guys were practicing here on the Olympic ice before you headed off to Wisconsin this weekend. So how are the boys looking for the weekend?
We're looking pretty good. We're looking pretty good. Things are starting to ramp up with us and in the meat of our Big Ten schedule here. So, we're rolling pretty well right now. So,
how do you guys do on Olympic?
I think it plays into our game a little bit because we like to play a speed game. So, having that extra ice, I think, does a world of good for us. So, it works out well.
Perfect. So, Joe, we're starting the first of a couple of, a series of podcasts here where we're talking to the presenters for the Great Lakes hockey strength and conditioning clinic that's coming up on April 30th here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's a great event. We started it last year and it was a huge hit. This year we've got some awesome coaches coming in, yourself included. And so your topic for the clinic is power development for hockey players. And we know hockey is essentially a sprint sport. It's a repeat sprint sport, just like a lot of team sports are. And your presentation is going to be a little bit unique. So you're going to be doing some lecture, maybe show some videos and have a couple slides here and there, but it's going to be hands-on. And I think there's real value in that is getting the coaching and getting your coaching cues and your methods kind of live as you would have them in the weight room. So talk to us a little bit about your methods and, you know, what your preferred method of power development is and how that progresses throughout the season.
Sure. So, you know, my background in terms of training is mainly a weightlifting background. So, you know, using the weightlifting movements and variations of is my preferred method. I think from a standpoint of full body kinematics in terms of being able to actually be aware of what you're doing and move as a unit, I think that's the best way to go about doing it. With that being said, there are obviously many different tools in the toolbox to be able to do all that stuff with. So, if we can't do that, we try to do the most complex athletic movement that they are capable of doing properly. So, for example, if we have guys that were doing some power clean movements or clean variations, you know, and they struggle with that, well, then we might just back it down to the biggest movement that they can do. So it might be a clean pull or it might be a power clean versus a hang clean or a full squat clean or anything along those lines. So, you know, whenever you're talking about power development, I think it's best to always think about the body as a unit. And always do everything to the greatest amount that the body can do at that point, if that makes sense. So aside from that, I like to use a lot of jumping. We do a lot of plyometric work. We also do some potentiation work where we'll move some moderate to heavy weights or do some moderate to heavy running loads or anything along those lines and pair that up with some unweighted or assisted work to help potentiate that nervous system a little bit. So.
Cool. Yeah, and I think, and that's sort of what we've heard from you in the past, and I know that you're a big Olympic lift guy. Like I know the guys are big into that, and you guys do really well with that. So you mentioned kind of athletic, like the biggest, most athletic movements that you can. I think the biggest kind of knock on Olympic lifts is that it's you're really working in one plane mainly. How do you go about, you know, you talked about jumps and maybe some throws. How do you go about training, you know, all three planes of movement?
So, well, a couple of things with that is, you know, I look at the body as a system. So, yes, you could kind of rationalize that weightlifting movements is in one plane. But if you think about it, you're always moving through different planes of motion, no matter what it is that you're doing. So, yes, it is that. But if you're looking at the body as a system and just looking to be able to teach the body how to produce power and develop power and rate of force development and peak rate of force development, I think that's a great way to go about doing it. So, and then when you start to get into things that are a little bit more specific, so you want to work rotational power, you want to work lateral power, anything like that, then we'll start to do some other aspects that are going to be, you know, lateral bounding or medicine ball throws or anything along those lines. So it's not that we get stuck in one thing. If we've got one tool, that's what I'm going to use is weightlifting movement. But obviously we're going to do things that are going to help prepare them for their sport as well, whether it's baseball or it's hockey or it's football or anything like that. So those three planes of motion, we'll always get touch up on that a few times a week as well, if not a few times a training session. So, and that's sometimes where it comes in where you're pairing up a weightlifting movement with, say, a medicine ball throw or a sprint or a lateral bound or anything along those lines. So it's not something that's neglected. It's not something that we put off to the side. It's something we always take into account whenever you're programming. Obviously, if you're able to analyze a sport, you're able to see what it is that there is specific to that sport. So, and then from that point, you got to be smart about making sure that you get that work in throughout a training session and throughout a training year.
Awesome. Yeah, I think, you know, it sounds like you're well-rounded there and you're covering all the bases. What do you see as, you know, you mentioned sport-specific. What do you see as maybe the best bang for your buck combination of movements or what do you see as the most, I don't know, most important lift for hockey players in terms of power development?
in a weight room for a hockey player, I would say a clean pull is going to be something that's going to be really important. The other thing is going to be some kind of loaded jump, whether it's a single leg or it's a double leg or it's a lateral or rotational or anything like that. But, you know, we'll do a lot of work where we're using weight vests, where we're putting barbells on our backs and doing squat jumps, you know, things like that. So I think that's pretty important. So, and if you're looking at hockey players versus anybody else, that there's always that lateral aspect as well. So we do spend a lot of time working, on the movement of a lateral bound or a 45 degree bound or anything along that line. So we'll get out on the trek at least two or three times a week and do a ton of that stuff. Again, to kind of make it a little more specific, you know, when everybody talks about power development for hockey players, there's not as much ground reaction force. You're always pushing in the ice. You're trying to get as much length as you can. So I think a lateral bound or a 45 degree bound or even a linear bound or some kind of bounding work is going to be important for a hockey player at that point as well. So,
yeah. And do you have any kind of guidelines? It's probably going to depend on the time of the year and you know, at what point you are in your yearly plan, but do you have any kind of guidelines that you use in terms of, I know when a lot of people are developing power, there's always that idea of maybe some nervous system burnout and that kind of stuff. Are there any guidelines that you use to kind of keep the guys sharp and make sure you're always working on that power without, you know, thinking about nervous system stress and all the other stressors that go along with it?
Yeah, so that's always kind of the age-old question, right? And my answer to that is the more developed our athletes become and the more in tune they come with their bodies, the more they're going to be fatigue-resistant. But at the same time, they also have to understand that they're starting to get a little more intricate with their movements or a little more intricate with their sport or whatever it is that they're doing. So things are starting to get a little more fine-tuned. So as soon as you start to see a lot of breakdown, I'll tend to give them a little bit more rest. You know, and we do a lot of stuff where, again, you're talking about power development. So you're talking about things where you need them to be fresh each time you're doing it. So, so we'll give them quite a bit of rest. You know, sometimes our rest sets will last anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes, depending on what it is we're doing. So depending on the level of the power development we're looking at and then the amount of stress that that's going to cause, and what we're looking to get out of it and the amount of load we're putting on that, will determine how much rest we give them. And then from there, you know, depending on how much we're doing that, we'll probably go every other day with training sessions along those lines instead of trying to go back-to-back with it. So, again, it's kind of what I talked about last year is having a plan and a vision of what you're doing each training cycle and then being able to rationalize that, you know, through science and research-based evidence and then go from there, actually implement that. So, but for me, the basic rule of thumb is as they start to look a little more fatigued, a little more tired, I just give them a little more rest and then not afraid to cut it off if needed just because of whatever. So the other thing also that we'll do is I guess vertical jumps throughout the season at least once a week. And then in the off season, we'll do it two or three times a week. It's just a real easy test. Throw them on the jump mat, get a couple jumps in and see, make sure we're within our range so that we don't have day-to-day fatigue, especially we're talking in a power training cycle, so that fatigue doesn't accumulate towards the end of the week and then you're starting to try to produce a lot of power and you're just not, and then you're unsuccessful, so then you're not setting the athlete up to be successful at that point. So
yeah, and that kind of leads me into another question here, and there's certain training methodologies that want to use, you know, big power movements for higher reps. So we know that hockey is a repeat sprint sport. We know that the ability to jump and rest and jump again and rest and jump again and rest is crucial for hockey. So how do you kind of walk that line, or I guess how do you condition to the point where you can you can get that repeat sprint ability without having to do a ton of like power work or plyometrics or I guess volume in the power exercises?
Well, yeah, it's kind of, I guess, a short answer is that we'll spend some time where I'm not too concerned about their fatigue. I'm not too concerned about hitting peak power as it is hitting a range of power. You know, for example, if you got a guy that jumps 35 inches, well, I'm not concerned with him jumping 35 inches every rep all the time. But if we're saying, okay, well, you know, we're at an 80% range, so we're going to jump anywhere between 29 and 32 inches every time we jump, and we're going to do that for 6 to 8 reps over 4, 5, 6, 7 sets, I don't necessarily, at that point in time, depending on the time of the year, fatigue is going to be a factor. I don't necessarily care as long as they're within that range. I don't care that they're hitting a 35. I just care that they're within that range at that point, so that they are starting to become conditioned at that point, if that makes sense, right? And it's the same thing with whenever we do any of our running or any of our other plyometric stuff. Those things will set standards or limits so that they're within a range that is moderate so that they can be successful repeatedly, and then we'll start to condition them to be able to do that, you know, a greater amount of time over a shorter or a greater amount of rep or shorter amount of time to make sure that they're starting to become conditioned to that repeat sprinting, repeat bouts of explosiveness that are geared towards a sport. So
nice.
And I'm sorry to cut you off, but obviously, honestly, you know, and the easiest way to do that's on a barbell as well, right? So if you're putting things at a range of 60, 70, or 80% or something like that, you know that that's going to have a certain amount of fatigue that's going to be involved with that. And if you just start setting some reps and some sets and cutting down rest time, you know that if their effort is going to be maximal at 80%, there's only going to be so much power that's going to be produced at that point, and that's okay, if that makes sense. You know, it's when you start getting the heavier loads or trying to get max power every time you're doing something, which is not uncommon and which is not the wrong way to do it, but there's going to be a certain amount of time where you just got to say, okay, we're going to hit a range and we're going to make sure that we are getting everything that we can at that point. So,
Joe, how do you determine that range?
So a lot of it's going to be experience and research, things that I've done in the past. My thesis for my master's program was based off of weightlifters and max power output at certain ranges, using the snatch lift. So what we found was that between 72 and 83% was when max power was produced. And then that seems to hold true throughout just my experience over time and throughout other research that's out there. So then as you're starting to see that, you just make sure that you stay within those ranges and have that set. So it's not that you can't produce more power, it's just that it takes typically a more advanced lifter to be able to produce a lot of power at those 90% loads or above. So
So it comes down to more technique at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So they got to learn, right? So they got to learn what they're doing. They got to make sure that they're really solid from rep to rep, and they've had a lot of time underneath the barbell to be able to do that repeatedly. So if you just back things down a little bit so that they're successful with each of their lifts, then we know that they're producing the most amount of power, which is obviously what you want to get out of a lift. So, and that, you know, in my mind, that applies to snatches, cleans, jerks, back squats, front squats, et cetera. So we'll spend a certain amount of time actually throughout the summer where we don't hit anything above 65% because we're working on power and speed and velocity. So, and I'm okay with that at that point. And actually at the end of that time, we tend to be at the same or slightly above our one rep max at that point too, because obviously the body's trained. They've got more success in terms of made lifts and they've got more confidence underneath the barbell. So.
Yeah. And that's interesting too. And kind of comforting to know that, you know, there's always that kind of argument is, you know, are you training weightlifters or are you training athletes? It's nice to know that you don't have to get, you know, you get to that 83%. It's not like you're training, you know, technique over and over and over again. There's a level of efficiency there, but getting max power even at 83%. So that's good to know.
Yeah, 100%. You know, that you're going to find that across the board. It's going to be high-end weightlifters or high-end powerlifters that are going to be able to produce that power over higher loads, just from a mathematical equation standpoint as well. Barbell's not traveling as fast, as far, so then therefore, you know, just the power output alone is going to be dropped just from that standpoint. But, you know, you're absolutely right. You're not training weightlifters. You're just using a technique to be able to train for a sport. So, you know, it's just like anything. Why do you spend time on a track if you're training for hockey? Because you're using a technique to train for a sport. You know, why do you use plyometrics to work to train for hockey? Because you're using a technique to train for a sport. It's the same thing. So it's not always just move as much as you can. There's going to be a certain amount of time, a certain amount of time spent doing that, but then you need to spend some time actually getting into it and making sure everybody's successful in terms of their lifts. The more success they're going to have, the more confidence they're going to have, the more confidence they're going to have, the more consistent they're going to be with training. The more training they get, the better they become, right? So,
yeah, good stuff. Joe, just to finish up here, I think, you know, the biggest value, and I think what I'm most excited for this year is to kind of see you in action, see how you coach these guys, because this is going to be a hands-on session during the clinic. So take us through a little bit, or I guess a couple of your biggest cues for, let's say, hand clean. It seems like that's sort of a staple for you throughout the year. So what are you looking for in a hand clean, and how would you coach guys, you know, on the floor? And, you know, take us through what you, let's say you get a group of freshmen that comes in. What are you talking to them, or what are you saying to them? First day, this is what this should look like. What are your cues?
Yep. So first thing we're going to do is, you know, I teach a top-down method, right? So I'm going to teach them all the basics that they need to know. They need to know how to do a front squat, how to receive the barbell properly, how to be, quote-unquote, comfortable with that. Whole front squat's not a comfortable thing, but they have to be comfortable enough to be able to do that. They have to know how to RDL. They have to know to extend their hips. So once we get that down, it might be a session or two to where we get that, then we'll start getting into the movement. Once we get into the movement, what you'll constantly hear me say is get some pop in the bar. Make sure that that bar is moving. Make sure the velocity is changing. When you decide to go as fast and as hard as you can, because what I'm looking for is that barbell to move and have a change in velocity, right, and an instant change of velocity. So when you talk about weightlifting, you talk about rate of force development, but you also talk, a big thing with that is going to be peak rate of force development. So making sure when you make the decision to go and you make the decision for that barbell to move, it's moving as fast as it can. It goes from 0 to 100% instantaneous, and that's going to help propel the barbell. That's going to help do things, make things easier in terms of the entire lift, but that's also going to help train them later on to be more explosive on an involuntary standpoint instead of a voluntary standpoint. So you know, there's a lot of things that go into coaching the lift, but those are the things that I typically always will harp on is let's get some speed. Let's make sure we're getting some pop in the barbell. You'll always hear me say extend fast or get long really fast so that they're getting full extension at their hip, not just reaching their back into it, not just shrugging their shoulders, making sure the timing's down properly. And then from there, they're just going to be more and more successful. So, and there's going to be a time where, you know, I tend to back off a little bit with my coaching, quote-unquote, back off, because they need to start to be able to do it on their own, and I'll give them less cues but more intricate coaching at that point as well. So it's not just every rep is not going to be coached. It's going to be after a set or two, they start to learn, they start to understand what they're doing, and then give them a couple more tips and a couple more coaching cues as we go. So I'm excited about the hands-on portion of it because I think it's going to be something that's going to be great, so that everybody can see how basic it can be to teach, so that it's not something that people tend to be scared of or say, oh, it takes too long to teach that, or it takes too long to, you know, coach that, or for athletes to understand it. It actually doesn't. It just takes patience and learning, just like anything else, any other field that you're doing. So that's what I'm most excited about. So.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be awesome and really valuable for, you know, for all the attendees. And so, Joe, I appreciate you taking time here. I think we'll wrap it up with that. Just know that Joe's going to be presenting at the Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic on April 30th, and it's here in Ann Arbor. And, yeah, if you want to learn more about that, that's going to be at the website that is greatlakeshockeystrength.com. You'll see Joe's profile on there and also his presentation topic. And Joe, thanks so much for taking time, and good luck up in Wisconsin this weekend.
No problem. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, that does it for the 33rd episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thanks to Joe Maher for joining us. I know I'm looking forward to receiving some coaching from Joe in his hands-on session, and I know that we're all going to benefit from that as well. Guys, if you could, please follow us on Twitter. It's at joinus@HSC. And we just got it started. We want to make sure you know about it. We're also on Facebook. We share a lot of information on social media that doesn't make the site. So check us out there for more great content about training your hockey players. Also, remember to head to greatlakeshockeystrength.com to register for the clinic. And you can also save your seat for the pre-conference on Friday, April 29th. That's a free session done by myself. We're going to be talking about strength training essentials for hockey players. So if you're in town on Friday night, it'd be a great thing to pick up. Also, if you're a local coach in the Detroit area and you just want to pop in for the free clinic, you can do that. So that's just going to be some extra value for the weekend. In the beginning, we really thought this Great Lakes Clinic was going to be a solid local event, but we ended up having people from all over, from Canada, from as far west as Wyoming, So we had a great crowd last year, and make sure you're part of it this year. Check it out. We hope you can make it to Ann Arbor on April 29th and April 30th. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This is Brian Sippets for the Hockey Strength Podcast. Until next time, be sure to train smart and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com, the world's best resource for training hockey players. Have a great day.